the light.
Humans have damaged the environment, perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Known in Cyprus as Birdman, 28-year-old Konstantinos Antonio is a wildlife veterinarian. Every year, he saves hundreds of sick or wounded wild birds. The animals brought to him are usually found by regular people. Konstantinos says climate change has made the task of assisting birds more urgent as their survival becomes harder and harder. The Cypriot environmentalist usually frees the animals after treatment in the presence of other people in order to raise awareness about the issue. A vertical forest has transformed the Chinese megacity of Chengdu into a concrete jungle, making the lives of the residents greener. Each unit at the 8-tower complex has a balcony with around 20 types of luxuriant plants and greenery. The green space filters air and noise pollution while creating a spectacular view. The project in the southwestern city was completed in 2018, and all of the 826 apartments were sold out at the time.
I think it's quite good. The air quality is pretty good and much better than my old houses. The air is good when you wake up in the morning, and the green trees are good for us elderly people. They are good for our eyes.
Besides all the benefits, the apartments have a major problem. They have been overrun by plants and invaded by mosquitoes. The issue has forced some of the occupants to move out. Other cities around the world, such as New York and Copenhagen, have also launched similar greenhousing projects.
The best visited multimedia exhibit in the world known as Van Gogh Live. The experience has opened in Munich after being postponed a number of times due to COVID-19.
Van Gogh is just the most famous artist in the world. He is also a prototype artist. He is the last artist who then tragically dies at the end. His life story was just fascinating, and that's why he is Van Gogh. But of course, his artworks are fascinating.
Featuring some of Van Gogh's best-known works, the exhibition is not only a feast for the eyes, but the senses with music and smells to accompany the colorful projections. The exhibit is supposed to smell like the countryside because of where Van Gogh lived. However, the organizers say visitors cannot really experience the feeling due to wearing masks. Van Gogh Alive, the experience was first presented in Singapore in 2011. Since then, the multimedia exhibit has been seen in 70 cities and has attracted some 6 million visitors. Conservation measures have managed to bring the world's most endangered cat back from the brink of extinction. In 2002, there were less than 100 Iberian lynx left in the wild. The situation prompted officials in Spain and Portugal to save the animal through a captive breeding program. They also tried hard to fight poaching and reintroduce rabbits, the cat's major prey, into the wild. By the end of 2020, there were over 1,100 Iberian lynx living in the two countries, most of them in Spain's southern region of Andalusia.
The main cause of death for wildlife, certainly in the natural environment, is related to human activities, roadkill, poaching, unwanted encounters. So the less interaction they have with humans, the better.
Despite the successful measures, the International Union for Conservation of Nature still lists the animal as endangered. It's estimated that the species will be out of danger only when its population surpasses 3,000. Urban development, hunting, and roadkill are the major reasons of death for wild lynxes these days. Brazilians have come up with a creative idea to combat population, that is pollution and global warming, repopulating mangroves. The project is aimed at reforesting an area equal to 75 football fields in Guanabara Bay. Organizers hope to make the biggest mangrove garden in the country. Mangroves, which usually grow in tropical regions, are essential to maintaining water quality and clarity. They filter and trap sediments, heavy metals, and other pollutants. Mangrove forests are also able to store 3 to 4 times more carbon than other forests.
A mesmerizing hot air balloon festival has got on the way in the U.S. state of New Jersey. The sky was littered with nearly 100 beautifully colored hot air balloons in different shapes, captivating every viewer. The awe-inspiring event brought together COVID-wary citizens to experience joy and jubilation amid health restrictions. Pleasant weather made the experience all the more enjoyable. The 38th annual New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning is likely the largest outdoor entertainment event in the tri-state area since the pandemic began.
Nostalgia is in the air in Paris as streets of the city are enlivened, that is, with old vehicles. The French capital has hosted an annual parade called Summer Crossing of Paris. It brought together over 700 vintage cars, motorbikes, buses, and tractors from all over Europe. The route started from a Vincennes castle east of Paris and ended in the southwest of the city. Drivers crossed the iconic monuments such as the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe.
It is extraordinary because the automobile industry heritage and the Parisian architectural heritage, which is obviously absolutely fabulous, echo each other. We are driving through all of Paris's most beautiful squares.
The 14th version of the event drew hundreds of enthusiastic visitors from across France. People were asked to wear masks and keep social distancing because of COVID-19. Tehran municipality has inaugurated an art garden that puts on display Iran's art and culture. As Youssef Jalali reports, the cultural facility aims to reconnect visitors with Iran's rich past amid increasing preoccupation with modern lives.
Sit back and enjoy the beauty of Iran's ancient culture. In Kushk Art Garden, located in the heart of Tehran, visitors get to learn about Iran's music, literature, painting, and calligraphy, far from the hustle and bustle of modern life. Kushk hosts Iranian artists who create masterpieces that have their roots in thousands of years ago.
Miniature painting has been around in Iran since thousands of years ago. In miniature, we paint flat images with a myriad of details. We avoid adding shades to make it as flat as possible, since in the past, Iranians believed that divine light gives shape to everything.
Metal engraving first stepped into existence 7,000 years ago in Iran. It is the art of incising decorations and metals. In this workshop, I will be available every day for visitors to see how I can turn metals into beautiful handicraft.
Kushk is part of a bigger project dubbed Art Garden. The cultural complex consists of an art lake, poem and literature house, music house, and Kushk Garden, each trying to promote an aspect of Iran's culture. Tehran municipality says it inaugurated the peaceful place, for it says cultural identity has been overshadowed by modern technology.
This precious place was a much-needed initiative to preserve the Iranian art and culture. As time goes by, technology gets more and more intertwined with our daily lives, and our genuine culture slips into oblivion. We need to have such cultural centers that safeguard our cultural heritage.
The Art Garden is situated on Abbasabad Hills in downtown Tehran. In recent years, the area has turned into a tourist attraction that houses structures that combine modern technology with ancient culture, such as this large pedestrian overpass called Tabiat Bridge, and the Middle East's largest planetarium, dubbed Mina Dome.
Kush could be the last piece of Tehran's art garden, and will be a hotspot for a range of cultural activities, all aiming to revive the ancient Iranian art and culture, which experts believe have become a lost piece. In today's hectic life, Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Palazzo Farnese is one of the most famous palaces in Rome and is being used as the French embassy. However, some of the rooms there are not open to the public. Now, an artist has come up with a creative way to show the historic building to everyone. An Italian artist known as JR has created a mural art installation on the French diplomatic mission in Rome. The artwork is equivalent to a virtual hole and shows what the building would look like if there were no outside walls. JR has conducted similar dazzling projects on other buildings, including a mural in the city of Florence, providing people with a sneak view of architectural masterpieces.
Cockatoos in Sydney suburbs have learned a new way to scavenge for food, opening wheelie bins with their beaks and claws. Australian researchers have found out that the parrot family birds are learning the ability from one another. Moreover, the scientists have discovered that cockatoos in different neighborhoods have distinct styles and approaches to pry open the bins. Although the birds opening bin lids seems to be a simple action, it shows a more complex behavior pattern that proves animals can learn, share, and develop subcultures. There is a famous quote, one should always try to turn every disaster into an opportunity. A Swiss hiker with Parkinson's disease has put that saying into practice by hiking more than 1,100 kilometers across the Alps. Yves Aubusson, suffering from the disease for more than 16 years, completed the challenge in less than 100 days last year. During his journey, he scaled high-altitude peaks and crossed nearly 100 mountain passes. Aubusson says his first goal was to inspire fellow patients to be active even if they are gravely affected by the incurable disease. But he says his major motivation was to raise awareness of the debilitating neurological illness, which is little known.
What motivated me to do this hike is that I wanted people to know better this disease that is so little known. So I did something that I think was important and that maybe people will relate to. The fact that I did this hike, some people understood it more than I hoped. It went beyond our hopes.
The 52-year-old hiker, previously a professional golfer, is now planning for a new challenge that includes a bike and a tricycle. But he believes that if he could encourage other patients to do sports, he will definitely win his challenge. Burpees are one of the gym exercises that many consider it either a funny workout or simply avoid to do. But that's not the case with a Brazilian man who set a new Guinness World Record with 951 burpees in just 1 hour. Cassiano Rodriguez Luriano, a professional mixed martial arts fighter, completed this feat nearly a month ago that was later verified by Guinness record adjudicators. Luriano says he was driven by a promise made to his niece, Rebecca, who was born with a severe heart disease, and the gym set up a fundraising effort for her. Luriano had originally aimed for 1,000 burpees, but fallen short of that mark
due to a leg injury he sustained 2 days before the feat.
I'm tired. It didn't go as smoothly as I thought it would go. I'm in so much pain now on my leg because I got hurt. And but I'm very, very happy with the accomplishment and in being able to help my niece. So that's the most important thing.
Luriano has not met his family since moving to Singapore in May 2019. He says the only way he could help them is using his athleticism. The previous world record was held by a Canadian who performed 879 chest-to-ground burpees within the same time limit in March this year. In the U.S., creative designers are trying to raise awareness about the environmental issues in a fun and playful way. A climate change-themed mini golf course has recently opened to public in New York City. It consists of 18 holes, each one featuring an environmental problem or a potential solution like habitat loss, energy inefficiency, and emissions. Designed by local artist, the course is made with recycled materials.
Climate change and the environment are such important topics right now and important issues that faces all of us now and will face us in future generations. So by bringing the environmental issues to the forefront in a fun, playful way like mini golf, it really sparks the conversation and helps folks understand the scope of the issue.
Visitors have welcomed the idea, saying it's both entertaining and educational. Organizers say all of the money made from the golf course will go to two local environmental groups.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The knock on the door came at 3 PM as smoke was filling the sky. When Christina Bowen heard the Plumas County Sheriff's deputy shouting, she knew she had to move fast. He said, point blank, pack your family's bags, you've got 5 minutes to get out, said Miss Bowen, a 40-year-old, recalling the scramble to evacuate from her mobile home as the Dixie Fire, by far the largest blaze now raging in California, swept through surrounding forests. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Simon Romero and Annie Carney. The piece is titled, This Isn't How We're Supposed to Live. Residents flee as Dixie Fire surges. The knock on the door came at 3 PM as smoke was filling the sky. When Christina Bowen heard the Plumas County Sheriff's deputy shouting, she knew she had to move fast. He said, point blank, pack your family's bags, you've got 5 minutes to get out, said Miss Bowen, a 40-year-old, recalling the scramble to evacuate her mobile home as the Dixie Fire, by far the largest blaze now raging in California, swept through surrounding forests. In what has grown into a grim ritual in this part of Northern California, at least 16,500 people have had to recently flee their homes as yet another colossal wildfire balloons in size. The evacuations are raising tensions in a region still recovering from the Camp Fire, which left 85 people dead in 2018 and is the deadliest wildfire in California's history. President Joe Biden met virtually on Friday, 30th of July, with governors from 7 western states, where devastating wildfires have grown more severe in recent years as climate change leads to hotter and drier landscape. They discussed how the federal government could help states with prevention, preparedness, and emergency response efforts. More than 80 large wildfires were burning across the country on Friday, 30th of July, scorching about 1.7 million acres across 13 states. The two largest wildfires, the Dixie Fire, which has spread to nearly 241,000 acres of land, and the Bootleg Fire in southern Oregon, have both been described by fire officials as burning earlier and more intensely than is usual for this time of the year, because of drought conditions and record heat across the region. In an eerie echo of the campfire which destroyed the town of Paradise and was started by equipment from the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, the utility giant told regulators this month that its equipment might have also started the Dixie Fire in the same mountainous canyon where the 2018 wildfire began. The cause of the Dixie Fire remains under investigation. Lindsay Paolo, a Pacific Gas and Electric Company spokeswoman, declined to respond to questions, instead referring to a report filed with regulators and a court filing in response to a court order that requested information on the blaze. The incident report, which the company filed on 18th of July, described how an employee observed blown fuses in terrain off Highway 70 and a fire underground near the base of the tree, which he reported to his supervisor, who then called 911. In the July 28th court filing, the company said it was continuing to investigate the role of its equipment in the Dixie Fire, which on Friday, 30th of July, was about 23% contained. As firefighters struggled to contain the blaze, Quincy, on the edge of the evacuation zone, was transformed this week from a sleepy logging town of about 2,000 residents into a frenetic staging area. At night, firefighting crews pitch tents and sleep in the town's park. At daybreak, they pile into trucks and bulldozers and head into the surrounding mountains. In one of the largest emergency mobilizations underway in the United States, at least 6,079 personnel have been called up to fight the Dixie Fire. They face an array of vexing conditions during 24-hour shifts, including hiking more than 15 miles through rough mountainous terrain to reach places where engines are simply unable to advance. Black Hawk helicopters whirling overhead, carrying National Guard soldiers with water to drop over the blaze, give parts of the area the feel of a war zone. Getting to Quincy from the city of Chico involves passing through multiple roadblocks and deserted Gold Rush-era outposts like Twain and Belden, which were somehow saved by firefighters. Charred trees still stand alongside much of Highway 70, as well as signs of close calls such as burnt automobiles in front of intact but empty homes. Some forested hillsides remained smoldering on Friday. Multiple signs on the road expressed gratitude for the firefighters deployed against the Dixie Fire. "I'm just glad to be alive," said Marva Stewart, a 75-year-old, a retired sales clerk who has spent the last week and a half in a makeshift shelter at the Spring of Hope Church in Quincy, California. "But it's frustrating not having any idea when this will end. This isn't how we're supposed to live in this country." On one afternoon this week, some in the cramped church scrolled through social media feeds on their phones for updates on the Dixie Fire, which started on 13th of July and has consumed an area larger than New York City. Baltazar Garcia tried many times to call his sister, but swamped mobile phone networks in Quincy meant he could not get through. "This has been really hard on me," Mr. Garcia, a 76-year-old, a former quarry worker, said in Spanish. "I'm alone here, and it's difficult to even find out what's going on. At least they're giving us meals." Other evacuees spent time in the parking lot of a semblance of privacy or sought refuge in their cars, turning up the air conditioning as the smoke turned the sky an unusual shade of orange. Every so often, they turned on the wipers to clean the ash settling on their windshields. "I can't take it anymore," said Tracy Ketchum, a 66-year-old, a retired homemaker, as she sat in her car outside the church. She said she was looking for some peace and quiet when she left Orange County in Southern California for the rural enclave of Greenville 9 years ago. "I study the Bible. Now I can't help but feel this is the end of days," Miss Ketchum said. The lack of privacy in the shelter, she said, coupled with reports that of Pacific Gas and Electric's involvement and the absence of reliable information as to how long this disaster could last, had her feeling at wit's end. "Maybe it's all a sign that I should just go home, no matter the risk," said Miss Ketchum, who lived alone. "All the waiting, the kids crying, the damn heat right here in town, it's got to be better than it is right here." As if pointing to the drought conditions nurturing wildfires in much of the West, temperatures have hovered around 100 degrees Fahrenheit this week in the areas around Dixie Fire. The wildfire has grown so much that in Sacramento, the state capital, that is 3-hour drive from Quincy, smoke from Dixie Fire raised concerns this week over worsening air quality. Authorities urged Sacramento residents with respiratory problems or heart disease to limit outdoor exposure. "It feels like we're swept up in something we cannot control," said Scott Ludwig, who evacuated from the mobile home park with Ms. Bowen and their two children. Mr. Ludwig, a former carnival worker who now gets by on disability payments, said he wanted answers from Pacific Gas and Electric Company. "It's insulting that we still have to pay an electricity bill to a company that doesn't learn from its own mistakes." Putting out a cigarette as he stood near the shelter's entrance, he gazed at the thousands of logs piled high nearby, a reminder of how much Quincy relies on the trees now going up in flames. "We have no idea if we'll have to evacuate again," Mr. Ludwig said. "Look around us. there's lots to burn if the wildfire reaches this place. We're nothing but roasted ducks.
Since the onset of the bloody war on Yemen, the United Kingdom has always insisted that it's not a party to the Saudi-led campaign. Despite all the denials, the British military has always been playing a key role in maintaining the Saudi war machine, especially in training, advising, and supplying the Saudi Air Force bombing the country. New documents have shed further light on the corners of this sinister cooperation. Declassified UK has now discovered that Britain has a secret detachment of up to 30 troops in Yemen, where they are training Saudi forces in the middle of the world's worst humanitarian catastrophe.
Well, it should be hugely significant given what it uncovers, British complicity in torture, which goes back many years. Britain was a key player in the Bush administration's war on terror, helping with rendition and torture. We know this. The cases were brought to court in this regard. But sadly, we have a crisis of our news media in the UK. This story has not been picked up by any of the mainstream media organisations, the BBC, ITV, Sky News, etc. And so the public is not being made aware of these revelations. Declassified UK has done a great job since it was established in investigating the dark and murky corners of British foreign policy. But it's not receiving its due coverage in the mainstream media, because we don't have a media which in a normal democracy has a mission of holding the powerful to account on behalf of the people. We today in Brexit Britain have a media that sees its role, a mainstream media that sees its role as holding the people to account on behalf of the powerful.
The British personnel are reportedly based at Al Rayda Airport in Mahra province of eastern Yemen. The troops are believed to have been there for several months. In the words of Hamid Zabnout, a tribal sheikh in Mahra, the tasks assigned to them so far are military training and logistical support, either for Saudi forces or Saudi-backed militia that are elements from the Southern Transitional Council, a Yemeni separatist group. Local sources say the British troops are flown into the airport by Saudi military aircraft and bypassed normal visa checks. Since the Saudis have banned mobile phones inside the airport, it is almost impossible to film or photograph the British troops. In an interview with Britain's ambassador Michael Aaron in late June, Yemen's Al Mahriya TV channel repeatedly questioned him over allegations of UK forces having been seen in the east of the country. This is how the British ambassador replied.
جيدة ووثيقة مع الحكومة الشرعية.
Fighting terrorism with up to 30 forces in a country existentially threatened by the Saudi-led war is a claim dismissed by many as untenable.
Well, they're there to aid the state terrorism that's been unleashed by the Saudis on the people of Yemen. That's very clear. This is doublethink on the part of the British ambassador, Mr. Aitken. This is them trying to justify something that cannot be justified by saying that they're fighting terrorism. When you're on the side of the Saudis fighting terrorism, then you have to take a sharp look at yourself in the mirror. The Saudis practice terrorism. This is less a country and more a family business whose primary business is murder. Just ask the widow of Jamal Khashoggi or his bereaved fiancée, rather, if you want that confirmed. Never mind the thousands of people who were routinely executed in that kingdom of blood. So Mr. Aitken is, again, showing his true colours, not as an ambassador of British democracy, but as an ambassador of British state crimes abroad. The Saudis have unleashed hell on Yemen since 2015. It's a disaster for the people of Yemen. Thousands and thousands have died. People have suffered famine, disease. Thousands of children have died every single day. And the British are up to their neck in blood, in Yemeni blood. That's the reality.
Bad Khalashat, a provincial deputy for youth affairs, estimates that Saudi and Western forces have built more than 100 underground cells inside the airport. Rights organizations say Saudi forces run a prison camp inside the airport in which detainees are subject to cruel torture or degrading treatment. According to Geneva-based advocacy group SAM for Rights and Liberties, Yemenis are being tortured by the British-backed Saudi forces at the airport.
Bertolt Brecht, the great German playwright from the 1930s and 40s, said it best. The crimes pile up so high they become invisible. And the crimes of the British state have become so invisible because there are so many of them, and that people are distracted by tittle-tattle, by the identity politics, by celebrity, by sport, etc. But this is a sordid turn of events when you have British military personnel, a country that likes to consider itself a pillar of human rights and stability and standing for everything good in the world, has its own military personnel complicit in the torture of Yemeni nationals. It's a disgrace.
Whereas the Saudi-imposed blockade has left millions of Yemeni civilians on the brink of famine, turning the airport into a prison where arbitrary detention and torture are practiced, all with the help of the British, indicates how far London is willing to go in support of authoritarian regimes such as Riyadh. According to SAM's president, Tawfiq Al-Hamidi, Saudi forces operate the airport's prison where they receive logistical support and military training by British troops stationed at the airport since the beginning of this year.
Britain is playing a material role in the war in Yemen. British soldiers are being training Saudi troops who are destined to go to Yemen to fight. British RAF personnel have been helping Saudi's air war against Yemen. They've been helping with targeting. They've been helping with equipment. They've been helping to maintain equipment. They are deeply embedded with Saudi's war effort in Yemen. And again, it's a disgrace. Again, it's iniquitous. But again, it's no surprise given where Britain is culturally and politically in this post-Brexit landscape.
Meanwhile, as of February this year, British officials authorized the export of almost £1.4 billion worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia in the quarter after the UK resumed sales of weapons, generating public outrage.
It's all about money. It's all about money. Human rights is but a fig leaf when it comes to money. Britain's relationship with the Saudis. Britain enjoys a symbiotic security and defence relationship with the Saudis. They train Saudi RAF pilots. Saudi military officers are trained at SANTERS, Britain's renowned officer training school in the UK. They're on the ground in Saudi Arabia. They run train and equip operations. They maintain Saudi's air force. There are billions and billions in arms sold from the UK to the Saudis. Indeed, the Saudis are Britain's single biggest customer for recipient of US arms, and it's all about money. It's a source of revenue, and even more so now when Britain is desperate for revenue after leaving the EU.
And so it's willing to go to plumb even lower depths than it already has when it comes to propping up these unsavoury regimes in order to benefit financially from them.
The detention and torture of Mahra residents is just another horror to add to the list of the Saudi-led coalition's unlawful conduct in Yemen. But it's also another case in which the British government is aiding and abetting Saudi Arabia to go on with its inhumane crimes, putting profit before Yemeni lives.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
London-based Advanced Pharma and its subsidiaries were found to have charged excessive and unfair prices between 2009 and 2017 for leothyronin tablets, primarily used to treat hypothyroidism, which affects at least 2 in every 100 people and can lead to depression, tiredness, and weight gain. We're prepared for an article written by Rob Davis under the heading Drug Firm That Hiked Prices by 6,000% Paid Shareholders £400 Million. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. A pharmaceutical firm that inflated thyroid drug prices by up to 6,000% over a decade paid out more than £400 million to shareholders and directors during the same period. London-based Advanz Pharma and its former private equity owners, HG Capital and Cinven, were fined a combined £100 million by the Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, on Thursday, 29th of July. Advanz Pharma and its subsidiaries were found to have charged excessive and unfair prices between 2009 and 2017 for leothyronin tablets, primarily used to treat hypothyroidism, which affects at least 2 in every 100 people and can lead to depression, tiredness and weight gain. Patients have told how they were left with no option but to pay private doctors for prescriptions and forced to hunt for cheaper tablets over the internet, buying the medication from online pharmacies and foreign suppliers without knowing whether tablets being sold were actually genuine. At the same time, Guardian analysis has found the company rewarded investors and directors handsomely via a complex system of dividend payments and intra-company loans involving offshore entities. During the period of the Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, found that drug prices were inflated. Companies' house filings show that dividends were paid to entities controlled either from Luxembourg or from Jersey. The company sells a range of drugs, meaning revenues were likely generated by a variety of products, including but not limited to leothyronine. During the period, the shareholder payouts were channeled through Mercury Pharma Group, part of the Advanz Pharma network of companies and one of the firms fined in the CMA's crackdown. Between 2009 and 2012, Mercury Pharma Group paid £44.4 million in dividends, while under the ultimate ownership of HG Capital via a Luxembourg-based entity called Midas. In 2012, fellow private equity group Cinven bought Mercury from HG Capital and merged it with Amdipharm, which it had purchased that year, combining them under the control of a Jersey-based entity called Amdipharm Mercury. Under the ownership of this new entity, Mercury paid a £12.8 million dividend. Cinven sold Amdipharm Mercury to Canadian drugs company Concordia Healthcare in a £2.3 billion deal in 2015, but the Jersey-based structure remained in place. Now under Concordia's control, Mercury paid dividends of £240.3 million in 2016 and £85.4 million in 2017, both to the Canadian firm's London-based subsidiary Concordia Investment Holdings UK Limited. This firm paid no income tax over the period, instead claiming tax credits worth a combined £42 million. It was able to do so in part because it made significant losses over the 3 years, partly due to £344 million in debt interest that it paid on £1.47 billion in loans that carried an interest rate of 10.5%. As well as paying the Jersey entity hundreds of millions of pounds in interest, Concordia Investment Holding UK also paid its dividends worth a combined £65 million. Concordia Healthcare changed its name to Advanz Pharma in 2018. Over the 8-year period covered by the CMA's fine for inflating drug prices, Advanz Pharma also handed significant payouts to senior managers. A subsidiary paid directors, who never numbered more than 3 people, about £21 million over the period of the drug price inflation. Spokesperson for Advanz Pharma claimed, "We are committing to the principles of openness and transparency in all our dealings with all applicable authorities, including all tax authorities. The spokesperson added, "The payment of dividends by a UK company to a Jersey company does not carry a tax benefit for any party, since dividends are not tax deductible for the UK payer in any circumstances. Under UK tax law, no tax is required to be withheld from dividends paid by a UK company, regardless of who receives the dividend, and dividends are not taxable on receipt in both the UK and Jersey. Given this, the dividends did not create a tax benefit." The spokesperson claimed the level of interest deducted by CIH UKL Concordia Investment Holding UK for UK tax purposes is in accordance with the law, and HMRC has agreed our taxes for the period. On Thursday, 26th of July, the Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, said it had fined Advanced Pharma, its subsidiaries Cinven and HG Capital, a combined £100 million. Advanced Pharma was fined almost £41 million, while HG Capital and Cinven will pay penalties of £8.6 million and £51.9 million respectively. The Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, found in 2017 that Advanced Pharma had taken advantage of limited competition in the market to bring in sustained price hikes for leofyrinine of more than 6,000% in the space of just 10 years. The repeated price increases led NHS spending on the tablets to soar from £600,000 in 2006, before the price increase strategy was implemented, to more than £2.3 million by 2009, as much as £30 million by 2016. The leofyrinine tablets were placed on the NHS drop list in July of 2015, causing many people who relied on the drug to face the prospect of stopping treatment, paying for the drug themselves, or relying on inferior treatments. HG Capital declined to comment.
Around the World with Reporters.
Palestinians accused Israel of using unjustified deadly force against Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank. In its latest report, Defense for Children International Palestine stated that the Israeli soldiers continue to kill Palestinian children with no recourse or accountability. In its report, DCI Palestine revealed that evidence it has obtained shows children killed didn't pose any threat to the Israeli soldiers at the time of their killing. The group says that Israeli forces used lethal force against Palestinian children in circumstances that may amount to extrajudicial or willful killing.
Killing unarmed minors amounts to war crime and even crime against humanity. Israeli soldiers act in line with shoot-to-kill policy, opening fire to kill Palestinian children. The troopers know their military establishment will hold any of them accountable for killing innocent Palestinians.
On Friday, a 17-year-old Palestinian boy, Mohammed Tamimi, was fatally shot by live ammunition in his back during a peaceful anti-settlement protest that was held in Nabi Saleh town, West Ramallah. Meanwhile, on Monday, a 17-year-old Yusuf Nawaf Mhareb, a resident of the Ramallah area village of Abwin, succumbed to wounds he had sustained a prayer when he was shot in the neck by Israeli forces during a protest against Israel's aggression on the Gaza Strip. Experts say that under international law, the use of lethal force during a protest is allowed only when a direct and lethal threat to life or of serious injury exists. And as usual, Israel continues violating international law, including rules which limit the intentional lethal use of firearms, in particular against children.
Israeli forces have a twofold purpose by targeting Palestinian children. First, they want to intimidate Palestinian children to prevent them from taking part in anti-Israeli activity, and second, to oppress the Palestinians in general, to impose and strengthen the Israeli military control.
Since the beginning of the year, 10 Palestinian minors were killed in the occupied West Bank by Israeli forces using live ammunition. Palestinians accuse Israel of using unjustified force against their children. They even warn that Israeli soldiers will continue killing children in cold blood as long as they won't face inquiry. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Speaker of Iran's parliament, Mohammad Baqir Qalibov, has met Syria's President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said that Iran is a main partner for Syria, which offered its support in all sectors. He asserted that ongoing coordination for fighting terror had a positive impact on the ground and will continue until the liberation of all Syrian territories. Qalibov said the Syrian and Iranian people's determination to participate in the recent presidential elections in the two countries proves the failure of policies of pressure adopted by their enemies. Qalibov held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart, Hamoud Sabbagh. He said military and political relations with Syria are currently in their strongest and best form, expressing willingness to enhance economic cooperation with Syria.
After their failure in military war against Iran, the Zionist and U.S. regimes have waged an economic war against us. Our joint priority now is to achieve development in our countries, improve our economy, restore the infrastructure, and increase the bulk of mutual trade exchange.
Sabbagh referred to the high level of coordination between parliaments of Iran and Syria, affirming that the two countries stand together in the resistance alliance, working to eliminate hegemony and colonialism which their enemies are imposing on the region.
We held a very special and important meeting for further coordination between both parliaments through consultations and the exchange of expertise. We also agreed on activating the work of our friendship committees in the two parliaments for the benefit of the two peoples.
Speaker Qalibov also held talks with Syria's Prime Minister Hussein Arnous. They underlined the importance of expansion of economic cooperation in both public and private sectors for facing economic sanctions, as well as the siege imposed on the Iranian and Syrian people. The exchange of visits between Iranian and Syrian officials reflects the strong historic ties between the two countries. There has been a noticeable development in economic, political, military, and parliamentary cooperation since the start of the war on Syria, which represents an alliance both states are strengthening to counter U.S. and Western pressure against them. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki and his wife.
Addressing the press, a member of Zazaki's defense team said the Kaduna State High Court discharged and acquitted Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat of all 8 charges in a ruling that lasted for several hours. The judge ruled that the prosecution has failed to establish any case against the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria and his wife.
The court ruled that the charge ought not to be in the first place. You cannot arraign a man for an offense that was allegedly committed, as at the time the said crime was not an offense. And the court was very emphatic in that yes, the Kaduna State government has powers to enact laws, but it cannot enact laws to prosecute an offense retrospectively.
Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat were arrested in December 2015 following an attack on his home and worship center by soldiers of the Nigerian army, which resulted in the killing of hundreds of Zazaki's supporters. In a statement, the Islamic movement said the judgment is a vindication of Sheikh Zazaki and a victory for truth and justice against tyranny and oppression.
The events of December 12th and 15th of 2015 were orchestrated by state machinaries who are using the instrumentalities of state apparatus to fight a religious fight. It is strictly, the event of December 12, 2015, is strictly a fight between Shiites and Sunnis. Fights that was imported from Saudi Arabia for whatever purpose.
The Kaduna State High Court has set Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat free. The Islamic movement and indeed many of Zazaki's supporters have expressed happiness with the outcome of this judgment. Benjamin Abdullahi, Kaduna.